or lame, which this morning is because it's 11:57 and we've spent most of Sunday watching Cheers.
But we wanted to do it. You wanted to do it. Well, when I suggested it, you wanted to do it immediately.
Yes.
Because I think you felt the pull of it and liked it.
That's
true. We even watched one bonus episode. Instead of just watching two, we watched three.
So
because we wanted to watch one more.
Yeah, because you said so. Because you always want to watch
yes,
one
I
more.
I always want to watch. I can watch 15 more.
I know. It was really good. This morning we're sitting here a little tired, so it's our tired voices. It's our we were out late at a party, which we don't normally do. Voice.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's just jump right in. We watched three episodes: the Tortelli Tort, Sam at 11, and Coach's Daughter,
yes,
which is episodes 3, 4, and 5. If you are on Hulu and want to catch up, they're also apparently, we found this out, maybe on the CBS app, which makes me think that something funny, like,
yeah,
they were the production company or something. Why,
that has to be something like that. But
that
Cheers is so
rights.
Strongly associated with NBC that seems strange.
Yeah. But. So anyway, we're going to check that out, but we didn't do that research now, so you're not going to get an answer. Okay. So
did you want to trade off the
yeah,
quick summaries of you want to do the first one?
Okay.
Okay.
Let me see if I can do this really fast.
The first one is the Tortelli Tort.
Okay. The Tortelli Tort is basically an obnoxious Yankee fan walks into a Cheers and insults everything and everything about the Red Sox, and then finally kind of insults Sam Malone. And Carla, in the first bit of amazing Cheers physical comedy that's leapt out at me, beats the holy hell out of him. And then the whole episode is about how she has to control her anger, which I found to be amazing. So just that's the Tortelli Tort. Sam at 11 is basically one of Sam's old buddies, baseball player buddies. Hi, I used to watch the sport ball. Comes into the bar and wants to interview Sam and for his TV segment, and Sam's all excited, and it turns out he only wanted Sam because John McEnroe and like every other sports person in town wasn't available, and that was sad. And it also has the best bit of physical comedy, that one of the best bits I've ever seen. So we'll get to that in a second. And then the bonus episode that we watched, which, because Matt said you gotta watch this one, it's really sad and famous.
I was right about that.
You were right.
Yeah.
It's called Coach's Daughter, and so that's the one where Coach, played by Ernie
Coach Ernie Pantuso
there.
And Nicholas Colasanto.
All right. Let's start this again. So Coach is
Ernie Pantuso
in the show, played by Nicholas Colasanto in real life, who was.
He played the lead mobster, the head of the mafia, or at least that family of the mafia, in Raging Bull, strangely enough. Coach played this crazy tough guy, and it's so funny to, you know, I never knew him. I actually only watched Raging Bull a few weeks ago for the first time, crazily enough. And seeing him as a tough guy was so strange, knowing him as a affable, muddle-headed old guy from Cheers. I had the reverse experience of probably my dad and the rest of America, who knew him as a tough guy and suddenly saw him as this sort of folksy,
right,
bubble-headed guy.
So Coach's daughter, who he's raising solo since her mother died, comes to the bar and says she's going to marry a guy, and Coach is all worried because it's this... he wants to like the guy, and the guy comes in, and he's totally crass. He's a traveling...
Suit salesman.
And basically the daughter's only marrying him because she has self-esteem issues, which Coach deals with in a very lovely way. And she tells the guy to go stuff it.
Nicely done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nicely
that's right.
Done,
I know how to recap. Those.
You really do.
So my
recaps are longer than the show.
I know. Maybe I'll be doing this from now on.
Right.
So I think the things that I want to talk about first really are the two bits of physical comedy in the first two episodes.
Yes.
Because holy crap.
Yeah. No, there were, if you think about it, there were three bits of physical comedy in the episode. One was, as Jenny mentioned before, this Yankees fan who was trying Carla's patience, and she leapt on his back like a spider monkey and started bashing his head against the bar, like, whoa, hey, you
was amazing.
Shut up. That was great. That was in like the fourth episode,
yeah,
of the first season.
Yeah.
And then there was another sort of middle of the show bit where a guy guy. It's just really a bit, really. It has nothing to do with a plot where a guy's complaining to Sam or kind of lamenting his existence to Sam. He works at a facility that deals with all kinds of pathogens and things that make you sick. Yes. And Sam is reassured.
Are you sure that's in this one? That's in the Tortelli Tour?
I thought you were talking overall about the bits overall of physical comedy that impressed you in these three episodes
we
watched. Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
And that was one of them where he was sort of talking. He was sitting at the bar. He was a non-regular talking about all these, you know, horrible chemicals and biological substances that he was working with.
As a janitor.
As a janitor. Sam reassured him, oh, you don't have to worry about it. They take care of those things. It's fine. You'll be fine. He's like, oh, thanks, Sammy. You really made me feel a lot better about this. And he walks away from the bar and leaves. And immediately, everybody on the set springs into action at the bar as if they were like with military precision.
Yeah.
Wiping down the bar, cleaning up the bar, tossing each other the glass that the guy was drinking from, taking the money that he had put down on the bar, throwing it into the garbage. Like it was like they were all sort of synchronized like a machine. It was very, very, very funny.
And it was just amazing. Like watching it, like I just kept immediately thinking about their rehearsals and how many times they had rehearsed it. Because it was so effortless. And it just like, you know how like in a good movie, both the audios, the visual and the music tell you that these people have been here forever with each other. That sort of physical coordination and unity in the episode, that was in Coach's Daughter. So episode five.
You could already feel that ensemble developing because that's what you kind of have to feel in order to have a physical scene with everybody involved.
With everybody involved. And it was just great. It was great. And then the other physical bit is the most famous one, which is in the episode Sam at 11, when the sportscaster leaves and basically ditches Sam mid-anecdote. Sam is upset and goes to the pool room, which is where everybody goes when they want to talk privately. And Diane walks in to reassure him, and she does such a great job. She says, go for what you want. Go for what's in front of you. And he says, okay, and kisses her. And then she throws him, does like a karate throw, throws him down on the pool table. And it's just one of my favorite bits of physical comedy.
Great look on Sam's Ted Danson's face when he is literally somersaults himself on, because we rewound it a couple times and there was a cut. But when the cut came back, he was very much the person somersaulting onto the table and flipping onto his back. So he did that himself. And, you know, his expression after he just gets flipped is hilarious.
And also it has the greatest line of all time, which is he's lying on the pool table looking up at the lights above the pool table. And what's the, do you remember what the line is?
Oh, look at that. One of my lights is out.
And it's just like, I don't know how you come up with a sequence like that.
Yeah,
like it's just
true.
So good.
How do you build that?
So that led me to a couple of questions, which I wanted to pose to Matt, which is, first of all, there are a lot of guest stars in these three episodes. Like people you have seen in a long, like that to me was one of the other through lines in this.
In a series where we've only watched five episodes,
right,
the fact that there are this many guest stars who are like the usual suspects that you see in 70s and 80s TV, it's weird, right? Because in most shows, I mean, I even know from writing on shows, and mostly I've never made it past the first season until the show I was working on now. Normally, they corral you to never come up with ideas that involve an outside entity because they want the conflicts to be between the people on the show first. Cheers throws that to the wind, and they still do a good job of keeping the conflicts and keeping the drives on the main characters. Like, I wouldn't say any of the guest stars take over.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've got in these three episodes alone, you've got like a classic New York 80s guy as the Yankee fan.
Yep. He's a guy named Ron Karabatsos, passed away in 2012. And he's another guy who was just in nothing in particular that would make him famous, but in so much 70s, 80s, and 90s TV that's the reason why you recognize him. He also played a mobster named Momo in the movie Get Shorty.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's where he looked familiar to me from. And then in Sam at 11,
you had Harry Anderson, who was the, you know, reoccurring con man character on that show, if you've watched it before. This was his debut, this episode. Very funny. And, you know, this would be what sort of would propel him onto Night Court. and Fred Dreyer playing another reoccurring character. It's funny, all these characters in the first four episodes, these reoccurring characters, they use them. They go through like the first four seasons. They pop up every now and again in the world. So it's interesting that they're world building that soon.
And they are really committing to the bar.
Yes.
Idea. And I really, that's why the guest stars in some way work. It's because everybody's always running in and out of the bar, which is totally true. If you think about the bar that you go to the most often, it's like, you know, everybody there. And so it makes sense that even just these random characters come in and out.
Yeah, in and out. And Fred Dreyer, you might know him from Hunter, the show in the '80s, and also a former football player playing the sportscaster that Jenny was referencing earlier that interviewed and then jilted Sam at a mid-interview. And then in The Coach's Daughter, the bonus episode we watched, his daughter was played by Alice Beasley, who you might remember from Moonlighting, I believe, right? She was terrific in that episode. I cried. This was another character, the guy who played the asshole that Coach's daughter was engaged
to. Familiar.
Character, an actor named Philip Charles McKenzie, who's still alive, still very much working, also directing, and has been in over 60 or 70 one part, you know, like day play a role TV shows in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
So he's a TV guy.
So you don't know who he is, but you see him, and for some reason you sort of recognize him. Yeah.
So that I find to be a fascinating thread, which I'm sure, and I love doing this, like watching an old movie or watching old TV shows and seeing the first time you ever saw Harry Anderson, which is amazing. And everybody, younger than 30 is probably like, who?
right. It's so funny that he...
Ask your parents.
That was his discovery. And since then, for us, he has been in Night Court, and then he went on to go on and do the Dave Barry show. What was that called? Harry's World or something?
Something, yeah.
A whole shows have come and gone since that. And now we've gotten far enough along that people wouldn't recognize him at all.
Anyway, so that's one strain that's going to run through Cheers, and obviously the other one, getting back to the bits, is the physical comedy, which is just like, holy God. It's like I even if you only get like a free Hulu or whatever, just go find and watch Sam at 11, because that to me was a spectacular bit.
Yeah, also snuck up on you because I didn't realize. I mean, when it was about to happen, I saw it coming, but I didn't know that was when. In my head, Sam and Diane's arc of their relationship, it takes place over a lot longer time than it seems to be, or than it actually does. I mean, it actually, they just in their fourth episode.
Yeah.
Had not their first kiss because it was a failure, but it was essentially the first kiss between Sam and Diane, the first time he tried to kiss her. I would have thought that would have happened 10 episodes in.
Yeah.
It happens in the fourth episode.
Also, literally not a word about workplace harassment. Sign of the times, baby. Sign of the times.
But that also goes back to when Chris Rock was on Saturday Night Live, he had a joke about sexual harassment. That's very pertinent to right now. Neither for or against the joke. I'm just, it was a very funny joke. And I thought at the time it said a lot, which was, it was during the Clarence Thomas hearings. And you remember, or perhaps many of you don't, Anita Hill and Brigham up the fact that Clarence Thomas, our Supreme Court Justice, asked her if she had a pubic hair on one of her Cokes, a Coca-Cola, mentioned a pubic hair on the Coke. And Chris Rock, in his Saturday Night Live monologue during when that happened, was talking about how a little bit sexual harassment, totally wrong, but does seem to be somewhat based on looks. And his point was that if Denzel Washington had said, "Looks like you got a pubic hair on your Coke," Anita Hill would have said, "Oh, Denzel, you're nasty, you fine self." And at the time, that had a little bit of truth to it, but doesn't excuse it. I mean, Ben Affleck, very attractive, coming under fire.
Yeah. So let it be a lesson to everybody out there. Just don't.
Don't be Sam Malone, even though Sam Malone's cool.
Yeah. Don't. Okay, so that's another strain, is this amazing physical comedy and ensemble comedy going on. And then you made a really interesting point that you made last time, but it really came true this time, which is we're not watching a sitcom, and this is your point, so I should let you explain it, with an A, B, and C plot.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think as Cheers goes on, it changes. It definitely changes because as they rely on their ensemble more for just like joke runners, they rely on them for, it grows so much, they rely on them for stories. And I think it winds up being more having B stories that they cut away to. But for the most part, we're watching a play with running jokes in it. You know, so there are other things that you can go to over the course of this play where we never really cut away from the action, but there's just really one A story. Like,
right.
Fundamentally, there was nothing that would have risen to be even a small story in the Sam at 11. It was just Sam dealing with his interview and what was going to happen with that. And Coach's Daughter, it was dealing with Coach's Daughter's fiance and he was a jerk and how were they all dealing with that. And in
the Tortelli Tort.
In the Tortelli Tort, it was dealing very much with just the fact that Sam was going to lose his bar because Carla had attacked a Yankees fan. And there were, in the episodes, sort of continuing jokes, like the fact, and I think the third one, the coach's daughter, that Diane wanted to be a caricaturist. And she was trying to force caricatures on different people in the bar, but it didn't rise to the level of, oh, we're going to cut away to the caricaturist story.
So it was like
it was just a runner, yeah. Which to me is very, very interesting because now if you, it's just almost unheard of not to have B stories to cut away with. At least on less so maybe with cable shows, I guess.
Right.
And I guess maybe we're returning to that a little bit, but the whole combining of multicam, meaning this is all taking place fundamentally on one set. And not only that, not only is it on one or two sets, but it is really only one story. You never see that anymore.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is just a little bit about, because I keep trying to check myself and thinking, well, like maybe I'm just adding all my knowledge of all 11 years of Cheers onto the fact that I think these are so good right away. And I think there's actually another explanation. So I asked you to look up who created this show and tell everybody a little bit about it, because I think that will explain why it is so good off the bat.
And it's, you know, Charles Burroughs, Charles, Les Charles, Glenn Charles, and James Burroughs. And James Burroughs has been in everything from directing movies to TV. I mean, he almost needs no explanation.
And he needs one for me.
Well, as good as it gets. Taxi. I mean, you name it. Comedy, and James Burroughs has been behind it as far as directing. Mm-hmm. And the Charles brothers, they kind of, like we were talking last time about the roots of Cheers goes back to a certain type of comedy, something like Different Strokes, and the sort of sensibility of its comedy and the way it's shot would maybe go back to something like a Green Acres or I Dream of Jeannie or Bewitched or
right.
something like that. And these guys, Glenn and Les Charles, they're behind Bob Newhart, the Bob Newhart Show. They're behind Taxi. You know, they go on, of course, to be involved in Frasier. So they knew what they were doing coming in, and they knew what they were doing going out.
Okay. So,
but
yeah,
the show was, I think, not popular.
Cheers
was not popular right out of the gate. It wasn't like oh, this is a runaway hit. I think it was buried for a little bit until it became part of that Family Ties Cosby Show Thursday night. I don't have the exact what its start was or what it's or when it actually became super popular, but I do know that it wasn't at the top, meaning Cheers was one of those shows that nowadays, if it got the ratings comparatively or relatively what it did then, and that it didn't succeed right away, that it might have been canceled in its first season.
Yeah. I was watching Family Ties. That came to me last night when we were driving to this party, and we didn't, all hermits didn't want to go to a party. And so we were playing TV theme songs to juice us up for the party full of TV writers. And I heard the Family Ties theme song, and I was like, oh my God, this is what I was watching. Like, I could tell you everything that happened on so many episodes of Family Ties. And I think that was just something that I could relate to more.
I'm surprised you never wound up catching Cheers, though, to then. It was because it was Cosby, Family Ties, and right. then Cheers was on at 9.
Right. So I just didn't, I just watch Family Ties. And I actually even think, if I'm being honest about my shady ass memory, that I was watching Family Ties in syndication at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Right, right. So that's probably why, is because they were not all on in syndication at the same time. And Cheers, because it was on at 9, it had like vaguely more mature.
And it took me a couple years too. I know I wasn't. These episodes that they're watching now, I eventually saw in rewatching in syndication. When they were first on, there's no way as an 8-year-old that I was watching Family Ties or Cheers regularly, because I remember rewatching the old, like, very young Alex P. Keaton working at a grocery store episodes.
Right.
And I had not seen them the first time around.
So I'm going to ask you this question for each episode, because I think mushing them together is problematic because they're so good.
Should we not do that anymore?
No. That's fine. But, all right. The thing that, as a writer, that blew you away about the Tortelli tort, in which Carla almost gets fired.
As a writer, the first thing that blew me away about the Tortelli tort was something which was not really as a writer, but as a person who has Cheers as part of their culture and associates Cheers with Boston. But I always thought Boston sort of leapt on, maybe it was because I wasn't watching these episodes from the very beginning, and, you know, wrapped its arm around Cheers because it was a TV show set in Boston. But that then later on, Boston came out about it. But in the early episodes, other than its location and its people speaking in a Boston accent, I wasn't expecting there to be a strong Boston,
like, specific detail.
Yes, that there was a Boston Red Sox game on, that there was a Yankees guy, that there were references to Yaz, that the whole plot was basically centered around the beleaguered and angry feelings that Boston fans, as early as 82, had against New York sports fans, back before, I guess, Red Sox fans were as bad as New York sports fans.
Yeah. back when they could play, and
that surprised me in that, I guess, third episode, because it was so heavily Boston influenced the plot.
Okay. And then any other things, like, from that episode from the perspective of structure, from the perspective of there are a couple things I remember about, and I don't remember which episode it was in, about the directing and the way that shots are set up. That's in the next episode.
Yes. Well, there was one framing device where you liked the framing device when Sam was being interviewed in
Sam at 11.
Yes.
Right. So in Sam at 11, they have a shot, and I've now seen them do it twice, where Sam is behind the bar. He's talking to someone else on the other side of the bar. And just in the far corner of the shot is Diane's place, where she's sitting. And so she, in several scenes in these three episodes, is sitting and watching and present in the frame. And she's continually reassessing Sam Malone.
Yes. Yeah. So in a way, they're still sort of building the arc of that relationship, even when it's not on them. Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
like their relationship is moving forward because she's observing the parts of Sam Malone that aren't like sort of
generic
bohunk athlete,
right.
Womanizing aspects, but the parts that are sensitive and intelligent, and she's sort of parsing them, right?
Yeah. So, and then there was the other framing thing in Coach's Daughter, where there was just like everything with Harry Anderson was just beautifully shot, right? But wasn't there that someone was walking past?
Yes. Harry Anderson was conning Norm with his sort of floating quarter bit. Like, I bet you I could take this quarter in the air and I can float it. Norm's like, you can't do that. He's like, all right, will you give me $10 if I can't do that? Sure, I'll give you $10. There's no way you could do that. And then he drops the quarter and just takes the $10. And as he walks away, like, oh, I guess I couldn't do it. He walks past Norm, who is self-satisfied that he's won the bet. But as he passes Norm, his face has fallen and he's realized he's been conned. That was great.
The timing.
Like, that was great directing and acting.
Yeah,
in that moment.
That it all, like, in just one tiny moment tells you what a level they're starting at.
And another thing, another shot that did that in terms of telling you what a level they're starting at, I think you would agree with this, is at the end of maybe the same episode, Sam at 11, where Diane and Sam has been sort of abandoned by the news crew and he's feeling bad about himself in the back room. And he was sort of cut off mid-story when he was being interviewed, and it was one of the great stories of his baseball life. And Diane came back in and was trying to cheer him up. It was right after that bit of physical comedy in that kiss that Jenny and I were talking about. And she wanted to hear the rest of his story that was cut off. And so he sat down and the story slowly unfolded. But instead of sticking on them, you heard them for a little bit. Her asking kind of doofy questions about the story as he told it.
And baseball,
could,
not
yeah, and baseball. About, yeah. And you could get a sense of them bonding in a very casual, easy way. And then the camera sort of moved out into the bar and sort of drifted over the everyday life in the bar of some of the other storylines that were going on, but kind of softly still existing, like Harry was conning someone else. And I found that interesting. And I wonder if that was just to sort of show that this is about Sam and Diane and this is about the bar. Like, what do you think the reason for that?
It's weird because, like, now the way in which these sitcoms, and especially even like in the 90s, not even now today, because now I think sitcoms are starting to break rules again that they weren't breaking for a while. But like those shots are like established. It's like this camera goes here for this, this camera's here for this, and this camera's here for this. And there's not a lot of necessarily invention in those mid 90s and O's sitcoms.
It's
there's always exceptions.
Camera feel to that.
It's And I was wondering about this, too, because it almost feels like Cheers is a single-camera show taking place on a multi-camera show.
I was thinking the same thing, Jenny. It's so funny you say that. The filmic quality to it.
Yeah.
And the fact that even though they have sets, I don't know, there's something about it. It's obviously multicam, but it has a single-cam feel to it.
Yeah.
And it has a single-cam feel to its comedy, doesn't
now,
it?
Even though we know, define single cam versus multicam for me.
Well, it's interesting because Cheers is so much of both, but like the vibe is single cam and the actuality of it is multicam, meaning it takes place on a stage and there are multiple cameras set up and it's shot like a play as you cut from camera to camera to get different people's reactions. Whereas a single camera, it's like a movie. You have a camera and you do several takes and you go all over tons of different sets and then you edit together all those takes and you edit together your little half hour movie. And you have a lot of quick cuts to different stories and stuff like that. Cheers is on three sets, but for some reason, it doesn't have, particularly of the day, that multi-cam feel to it. It has an easy, flow, unforced single-cam vibe to it.
Yeah. I'd love an actual person who does directing to come and like analyze a couple of the episodes because I was just sort of like taken away.
Right.
Just with that final shot in that, right. Like where it just drifts out over the crowd.
Well, you know what's funny is you notice, I guess it's just the style. I mean, I don't think it's on film, right? It is, but you notice shows like Taxi and Mary Tyler Moore and Cheers have a different feel to look to them than Archie
Strokes.
Bunker or, you know, All in the Family or Different Strokes or Facts of Life. And even though they are both multi-cams, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We'll have to figure that out. There will be Googling. Any other parting thoughts here?
I think it's going to become increasingly hard to watch just two at a time, but also increasingly impossible to recap any more than two at a time and stick to it and talk about it in an organized fashion. But we're going to want to watch more and more because the serial aspect of it will drive. You know, I remember watching an episode of Cheers and being like, oh, I can't wait till next week. And dear God, I can't wait till next season when they leave a cliffhanger. And I think we will feel that more and more as we watch them.
See you next week.
Bye.